Good evening, everybody, and I apologize for the delay there. We did have a last-minute addition to our podcast here tonight. We have with us Chris, and Chris is one of our good buddies. We've been out and about a little bit, and he's joining us for the topic tonight. And tonight's topic, episode 114, and I have titled it Planning for New Adventurers. And basically what we're going to be chatting about is, you know, getting people that are interested in going out there in the woods, out there and in the woods, so they have a good time, think about their needs, think about your audience, stuff like that. And we've had some questions on that in the last few weeks, and Ben and I were chatting, thought it'd be a good topic to talk about, and funny enough, Chris was chatting to Ben, and now here we all are.
he got kidnapped. He didn't really know what he was getting into. That's my story. No,
he was completely hijacked, I think is the correct term, because he wasn't planning on this. We just threw him in, and now he's stuck with us.
Send me a link. Click on it. Here I am.
That is probably not the sketchiest thing that has happened today either. Ben sends you a link and is like, click my link, and bam, now you're in a podcast.
Oh, my. Any way to get someone else involved in a camping adventure.
But that's kind of what tonight's all about, though, is getting people involved in camping adventures, right?
There's a reason I own a white van. You know that, right?
Does it say free candy on the side, though? Because that's really...
Not yet.
Free camping gear is what it's going to say.
It depends on how hard it is to find camping buddies. I'm going to try anything.
I've only been in his van once. I think I'll drive my own rig.
Hey, I think we took the van up to your cottage that time, didn't we, Ben? I met you at your place and we took the van up. There was nothing wrong with that old thing.
That van's not old. It's 2018.
I mean...
No, it's not. It's actually not Ben's van that actually concerned me. It's more of his lead foot.
My lead foot. Oh my!
I'm not touching that. I'm just gonna leave that hole.
Speed limit.
But
most of the time, yeah, so most of the time,
at least twice on every trip. Depends.
So before we get into your topic, so Ben's idea of driving the speed limit. Our last big canoe trip with his family, we left Ben's place, and he had his trailer on with three canoes, and Ben's idea to test whether or not the canoes were strapped down tightly enough was, let's hit every bump on the road as hard as I can just to see if the canoes are going to fall off.
Well, now I got to ask, did the canoes fall off?
Yeah. Nope, canoes are still there, so we must be good.
It was a successful test.
Yeah.
But I failed to see the problem here.
But all right, so yeah, tonight, getting new people out there in the woods, and like I said, Mel and I very quickly touched on this on our episode there a few weeks ago, and we've had questions about it in our email and in our messages, and the big question that I guess we were getting is, where is a good place to take somebody that's new to bushcrafting or camping or just outdoors in general, but they have a genuine interest? And how do you get them set up to have a good time? Because a lot of people like us, and I say us as in bushcrafters, outdoorsy people, whatever you want to label us as, is we go out and we have an idea of what we want to do because we get the experience and stuff behind us. There's people that like the idea but have never actually made the commitment to going out and trying going in the woods. And which is all good and fine, but if you're going with somebody, which, you know, here at Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures, we always advocate safety, so if it's going to be your first time going out into the woods and you're a little unsure, go with somebody that's has a little bit more experience. We advocate that all the time, but there is things that you can do to hopefully get that individual to have the best possible chance at having a good time, building some confidence, and continuing to, you know, get out there and have fun, get dirty and have fun like we always say, right?
Yes, for sure. What I want to throw out there is I think the first thing to do is set reasonable expectations. And it's because some people want to overdo it, to make that first trip like this super epic thing so that they think someone will fall in love with it. But unfortunately, that may put the expectations a little bit too high and add the stress and maybe push people a little too hard and drive them away from it. So you may have the opposite effect as your goal, So setting some reasonable expectations and finding something that's probably a little bit more local, a little bit more easy, might be your best bet rather than planning your first trip to be a 7-day trip down, you know, a river, or I wanted to say, you know, the Grand Canyon, like just that whole river system. Like, you don't want it. That can't be your first trip.
You don't want to hike the Appalachians on your first going out.
No.
Right? That's setting your expectations a little too high. Is it going to be epic? Yes. Would it be awesome if you succeeded? It would be. But I think that's a recipe for potentially a heavy failure. And then someone's going to turn around and say, I can't do it. It's too much.
And truthfully, they'd probably be right, because, I mean, taking the Appalachian Trail for, you know, as our example, somebody that's never been out there, they don't have the experience, they don't have the skill set, they don't have, most likely don't have the gear. Even if they went out and had unlimited money, chances are they don't have the experience to buy the appropriate gear to do such a thing. And like you said, it's going to leave a bad taste in their mouth.
Yeah.
For sure. Now, so I'm in the process of trying to introduce my wife into backcountry camping, more from a canoe perspective than a hiking perspective. So I think my approach has been to let her kind of take the lead as to what she's comfortable with and where she'd like to go to start, and what gear she'd like to start off with. So that's been the process of being a little bit more expensive than I thought it would be, but I'm willing to take that dive to get her out to with me with the things that I like to do, right? So
no, and that's a good a point there. Sorry, Ben, didn't mean to cut you off, but I guess the only thing I was going to add into that was what I took from that is communication. You're at least talking to her, you know what she's expecting, and you're hopefully guiding her as to what you hope your end result's going to be, right?
Well, that's it, right? So I think my best approach, and it seems to be, you know, let her pick where she'd like to go, where she thinks she might be most comfortable, you know, and then if I think that might be above her skill level, then I probably would say something. But in this case, you know, we'll just start with a small stationary lake trip, you know, something that's not very impactful. It's not going to be, it's just going to be kind of a lazy day to get to where we're going. Easy setup, pick a good weekend where the weather's nice, and let them kind of take everything in a little bit slower than, you know, just throwing them in a boat, skimming through 4 or 5 lakes and 2 or 3 portages, and, you know, having to set up camp like just before dark. Any of that's going to turn anybody off.
Hmm.
Yeah. A good comparison, because exactly what you're describing is our trip that we did to Kedgy. That's the Southern Lakes we hit. That's not necessarily something you would want to start a newbie with, because that first day was pretty rough. And we had 4, 5 fairly experienced campers on that trip. And all of us at one point or other struggled. Not
confident. Yeah, definitely. Right.
But all of us at some point in time said we were tired, we were a little frustrated, we were, you know, at the end, we all very much enjoyed it. But some of that came from experience and knowledge that we were going to make it, and it was going to be a good trip, and there was epic times with it. But I agree with you 100%. You know, planning a nice, more relaxing trip with opportunities for great experiences kind of sets them up to know what they're going to expect, and leaves a good taste in their mouth for the start, which I think is great. You're going to have the opportunity, I assume you're going to have some great meals planned for this.
And you know what, I think if you're trying to introduce somebody to, you know, camping, canoeing, backcountry hiking, or whatever that the flavor may be, there's a good chance that that person's going to be a very good friend, a new friend, or your spouse, and neither of which you kind of want to leave a bad taste in their mouth, because there's a good chance they're going to look at you and say, you're nuts, I'm not doing that again. So, you know, take your time, let them kind of pick their pace as to what they're comfortable with doing, and just make sure they're prepared.
Yeah. And honestly, like, anytime you start camping with someone, even that you suspect are knowledgeable and capable, it's good to start that way. To be truthful, me and you did that. Our first trip wasn't an overly hard trip. It was a great opportunity to kind of feel out how we would work together, how things were due, where each other's levels were, because you don't want to overthink things and think, oh yeah, it's going to be fine, and then set yourself up for a disaster, or set yourself in a position where you can't, you know, you can't really fix it at that point. You're already in too deep. You're already.
I think the biggest mistake a lot of people make, be it new or, you know, seasoned, we're all guilty of it, and I'm guilty of it. You can bite off more than you can chew very easily, you know, whether you forgot something in your gear that's key to, you know, your own comfort. Any of those things can make for a bad trip, right? So preparation's key, new camper or seasoned for that matter.
Yeah. I've definitely started trips where I've questioned myself hard. Have I overplanned this? Have I set too big of a goal? So far, luckily, I don't feel I have, but I always question that because I always try to think of every possibility. And if this happens, what? And I think that's sort of the next thing that we really should talk a bit about is having some contingencies because things don't always go as planned. And we've talked about this in other episodes, but have a backup plan because once you get there, if things don't work out the way, so you have an idea, even like your easy, you know, still lake, no portage trip. If you have a spot you're planning camping, you show up and there's people already there. Now you need to have some plan B. And that's a big part of it is make sure that you're ready in case things don't turn out or if the weather isn't ideal. So what is your, you know, what would be your option if you show up and the wind is so bad you can't get out where you want? Because one thing you want to do is start and then say, oh, we're going to just turn around and go home. Then I think that's a bad taste in its own right. So having that backup plan, like, okay, if I get there and this doesn't work, then we can always still do this.
Yeah, just to that extent, back once again, referencing the episode that Mel and I did, when we first started camping, I was talking about a lake where I had taken her. And the first trip was great, all went good. But later in subsequent trips, one weekend we went up there, just, you know, we were going back. We knew the area, stuff was great. It was a good little easy area to get to, had a boat launch, a little dock. It was great. But where we were camping was actually a buddy of mine's property next to this lake. And we went up. I didn't check in with him because, you know, whatever. And it was the exact same weekend he decided to go up and, you know, be at his camp. Now, to be fair, when we were up there, the first time I took Mel there, and this is kind of double contingency, we went to go tent camping. Had the air mattress, all that good works. We went with friends. And that was good and dandy. Now, the contingency plan to that wasn't a different location. It was if the weather and stuff had turned bad, I knew that Bruce's camp was literally right there for us. So if the weather got bad or it got too cold or whatever the case may be, the contingency was we could have went into the camp. But now on the second trip, the contingency was, well, that was still the contingency, but unfortunately the whole thing went awry because Bruce was there. He had taken his girlfriend and little one up and they were doing their weekend thing. And I mean, we were more than welcome to camp in the yard and stuff like that. But now you're just kind of cramping on other people's style, right? Which would take away from our trip. It would take away from their trip. And we didn't have a backup plan. Like, the backup plan just became, I guess, we won't go camping this weekend. Well, we tried. We tried to scramble together a plan in a hurry, but it didn't work out. We ended up just kind of doing nothing that entire weekend, which was kind of crappy for us, especially because at the time, I was living in Halifax. She was still down in the Pictou County area, and I was making these trips back to this area to try and take her out camping and do stuff for the weekend, and it kind of blew the whole thing up, which, I mean, at the once again, we'd already gone camping a couple times, but imagine that being your first or second attempt at taking somebody out, you know what I mean? And you have this great plan, and then all of a sudden they're excited for it, and it just all falls apart.
You know what? I think if you can give any advice to anybody who's just wanting to do backcountry camping or camping that's not in a provincial park or a federal park, most people that have that interest have at least camped in a campground. And I don't know if you guys, but from my experience, I've been in a campground and I've seen people who you can tell that are not prepared, never thought out, you know, what their camping trip was going to look like when they got to the campground. They get, you know, things strewn all over the place. So if you're just getting into this kind of thing and you have an interest in doing that, you know, backcountry canoeing or hiking or what have you, look at your previous experiences as to, you know, what you did when you first went to a campground, because I can guarantee you there's not a person out there that when they first started camping knew what they were doing and definitely went unprepared.
No, 100%. And funny enough, on that point, something I do recommend to people, and I like your guys' opinions on this too, is if you are taking somebody that's real green to going out there, like maybe not even has a lot of woodsy experience, I recommend hitting those provincial campgrounds, especially like ones like Dollar Lake and Smiley's and places like that, where your campsites can be kind of nestled in the woods a little bit. It gives, I don't want to say the illusion, but it gives you that feeling of kind of being in the woods with a lot of the niceties you're not going to have by actually, you know, going off grid. You're going to have that outhouse or running water or toilet or, you know, that little... Those creature comforts always seem to be the ones that get people all the time that end up going like, oh, I didn't like going out. Well, why? I didn't like having to go to the bathroom in the woods, or, you know, I didn't like not being able to wash my hands, or I didn't like being able to in the morning do whatever, right? But I kind of find those areas that nice crossing ground. You can at least feel it out to see how things are going to go. Like, oh yeah, so this was camping. This was sleeping in a tent. How would you feel if you had to go pee in the woods? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. We camped when I was a little kid. Like, my parents camped. I've always been camping. And so my first real experience of taking somebody who wasn't really into camping, and I very much misjudged this individual's capabilities, and I really regretted it, because I think I did make the trip kind of miserable for him. And the thing is, I'd planned this trip with him, I'd asked him all kinds of questions, and I think part of it was pride, but he kept saying, no, I'm good, I got everything I need. And I was like, oh great, so he's good, he doesn't need to borrow any of my gear, he doesn't need any suggestions on food and all this stuff. And then we get out there and we get on the river, and he doesn't have half the gear. He didn't have a tent. He didn't have the right food. Like, he had a pack of sandwich meats and stuff. I mean, it really was to the point where, like, it wasn't a great trip for this individual, and it was unfortunate. And a lot of it was my fault, because although I asked the questions, I didn't verify. I didn't take that extra time to prove it. And the thing is, that can be a difficult thing, because a lot of people don't want to admit they need help, and they aren't necessarily going to want to share things to show that weakness, but unfortunately it's going to show up later. So if you're going with someone new, it's oftentimes really good to kind of ask the questions in a different way, so that you're not showing that you know more than them and having, but actually ask them questions as if they're the equal, and just to see if they can give you some advice and stuff. And between the two, you may be able to figure things out. I'm much more inclined now, when I'm going camping with someone, to find out, like, are you taking an axe? If so, what kind of axe? Just to judge what kind of gear they have and say, like, you know, I have a similar one. Maybe we both don't need to take this, but I have this. Do you have this? And it gets you a better idea quicker of what they have and what they need and what they may want. Oftentimes, even the most inexperienced person may still have a few things that you don't, or have thought of something that you haven't. So don't be too quick to assume you're the more experienced one in any situation, or that they have nothing to teach you.
No, and you know, to Robert's point, is into like going to provincial parks or federal parks. Before I started taking Cohen backcountry camping, Caribou Park's like a half an hour drive from my house, and we went there when my kids were small. all the time. It was 20 minutes drive from my house. My kids were small. It was easy for us to go to that park, and if things went south, I was a 20-minute drive to home. But it got them out. I got a good idea of what Cohen was comfortable with, what Cohen could and couldn't do, before I decided to start taking him out on backcountry camps. And, you know, he's 17 now, just about 17 now, and he loves being outdoors. So, if your interest is to try to pique your kid's curiosity or your own, like Robert said, that's the perfect way to start, because you can, practice your fire starting in a campground just as much as you can in the middle of the woods.
Yeah. And you have the backups too, like where you register, there's usually some chips, roasty sticks, marshmallows. They have some of the basics. So if there is something you forgot, you can still get some food. There's usually good trails. There's good access to water on almost every campground in every provincial campground that I've ever been in. So you have options. And I think I've been in Carrow Monroe Island with my canoe. I think I've actually canoed from that beach, which was
And you know what? I'll tell you, you want to build your confidence. A good way to do that is, there's nothing wrong with a safety blanket starting off, just to build your confidence. Know what your limits are and what they're not.
No, for sure. If you're not doing the campgrounds, my suggestion really is to not make that big of a trip from your vehicle. To camp in an area where you can get back to your vehicle in a very reasonable time frame. And that may mean car camping or camping so that you can still see, or even if you do canoe out to a spot that's still visible from your vehicle. Because if things do go bad, or if you do get cold or wet or miserable, you can always make it back to the vehicle for warmth and comfort. And you have that same advantage at the campgrounds. At the campground, if you do wake up in the middle of the night and it's just not comfortable, you can at least crawl in your vehicle and start the vehicle up. Like, there's an option there.
And it's not even for the getting out of the weather and stuff too. Like, don't get me wrong, super valid point. For people going out there that's new, what we tend to overlook with a little bit more experience is there's a fear factor there of sleeping in the woods. You know what I mean? Especially with kids, younger people or inexperienced people, just what goes bump in the night really gets people wound up sometimes. And I mean, Ben and I have said it a couple times that the waterfalls, it sounded like voices in the middle of the night. And I mean, that can be unnerving if you don't have the time, like the experience to be like, oh, it's just the water moving the rocks and stuff like that. Because I mean, it didn't really unnerve us, but we were very curious as to why there was voices in the woods. Now, imagine having zero experience in the woods. You're already wondering what the squirrel sound, because we all know that as things get quiet, a squirrel sounds like an elephant running through the woods, right? If you ever hunted, you know that. Now, imagine this kind of noise in the middle of the night with the person you're with is sound asleep. It's nice if you, like Ben said, even if you canoe away, if you can see the car, that's your safety. That's your lifeline. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So we did have one comment over here from Roundabout Media. So their issue is, what spots are available outside the campgrounds? The best locations you'd want to camp are in WMAs, or I'm assuming wildlife management areas. But camping is prohibited, which is kind of interesting, because here in Nova Scotia, we have wildlife management areas and then we have Crown Land. All wildlife management areas are owned by Crown Land, but not all Crown Land is wildlife management areas. So you are technically good clamp on all Crown Land in Nova Scotia, unless it's otherwise posted or notified and all that good stuff, as we were talking about before we started there, Chris. And the other thing they says, whereas like Ocala National Park has lots of spots, but there's too much trash and the risk of who we call yee yee boys. Now I am very curious as to what a yee yee boy is. I have an idea, but I want to hear the definition coming in while you're trying to be alone. And that's all part of the pre-planning, right? So don't go to a spot where you're going to be like, I've had a lot of people ask me, is it great to camp off a four-wheeler trail? And my answer is always, do you know who's going to be coming down the trail?
Yeah.
Because maybe it is, if it's just your pals and they're going to stop, be like, oh, hey, how's it going? Do you need anything? We're going by. That's great. If it's just, here in my area, we have the you know, the tail end of the Trans-Canada Trail system or the start of the Trans-Canada Trail system, whichever we want to look at it, going back here. And I mean, you could get anybody and their dog blowing by that might stop and talk to you. They might just tear around all night, or they may try and smoke you out in the middle of the night. Like, I would not recommend camping there.
No. Me and a buddy of mine, we were in Bowater Lands one time camping, and you know, we were a fair ways back. We got drove quite a ways back. We got dropped off at the end of one lake. We paddled for a full day and then set up off the side of this lake. And we didn't think there was any trails around. And partway through the evening, like it was starting to get dark, two or three big quads came rolling up the side of the, and a trail apparently was only about 150 feet from our campsite. Like, although, you know, it wasn't an official campsite, it was backwoods camping, you know, at the least description for this spot. It was a little kind of unnerving because these guys just stopped just 150 feet away from us, and you could hear them talking and stuff, and that wasn't the experience we were looking for. And didn't know, like, are they going to come out here? Is there going to be, you know, are they going to be okay with us here? Are they going to try and intimidate us? We didn't know how that was going to end. As it was, they sounded like they had a few beers, got back on their vehicles, drove off. So they never did speak to us. But that is a thing. Like, when you are in areas that are more populated, you don't know. And I think we've said this before, sometimes the most terrifying thing in the woods is the other people, not so much the animals and stuff, which is kind of funny because a lot of our questions are, what do you do about wildlife and stuff? But it's, I think, and knowing you two guys, I think we've all said it. The thing that terrifies us most in the woods is the other people.
Yeah, and you know what? That leads me to a good thought of, if you're going to be camping, know your surroundings. Know what land you're on. Is it private land? Have you spoke to the owner? Is it, you know, is it crown land? Where are the trails? Are there animal trails? All that kind of thing. I think I've always taught Cohen, if you're going to camp, don't camp on an animal trail, let alone an ATV trail.
Oh, yeah. There's a really good story. I spent a lot of time reading about the Appalachian and the Pacific Crest trails. And I mean, those are amazing trails. But one lady, she was hiking and she stopped in the middle of the night and it was dark. And she said she thought she'd gotten off the trail and she didn't. She set her tent up. And at about, I think she said like 5:30 in the morning, someone literally tripped over her tent. Like, yeah, it was still dark, and somebody was running. They got up and jogged this trail. That was their thing, and they literally tripped right over her dam.
Jogging trails at night. Now, there is a hobby I have not. I don't see a big demographic for, but maybe. No. Maybe I'm the odd one here.
But, and the other one is deer. Like,
yeah.
Any trail, deer and other wildlife oftentimes run, and it's not always the deer, but what maybe was following the deer. So the deer may clear your tent, but the next thing coming behind it may not. And it may not be looking for you. It may not even be a threat to you, but it's still going to be the most startling thing to happen to you that year.
No, and you know what? That's funny that you say that because, well, you were with us, Ben, last year. We weren't on an animal trail. We were in a camp in a federal park. And Cohen had a deer literally put its nose right up underneath his fly and sniff in his tent. But that was enough for Cohen that the next night he was in my tent. And, you know, he's not little, but that was enough to, it's like, I'm not sleeping alone. I'm going in Dad's tent the next night because, you know, even though he knew it was a deer and it just kind of huffed at him, that was enough for him to say.
No, I was going
to
say, a deer is not necessarily an animal to tangle with, depending on the time of year. You know what I mean? If it's coming on rut, they can get a little.
This was fall. This was late fall.
Yeah, and it just kind of gave him a little snort, but it was enough to wake him up and startle him. And, you know, the next time. And he's been camping plenty, you know, and typically sleeps through the night. But, you know, again, that was enough for him to be sleeping in my tent the next night. And I'll tell you, it was a tight squeeze.
I won't mention no names, but if anyone wants to look out, I mean, it's findable. But there's a buddy of mine that sent me a video one time, and he was wondering, what is this noise? And the noise was a stag snorting at night, and he was on its trail, and the stag did not like him there, and it was telling him basically to get the hell out. And he sat there, didn't know what it was. He posted a video on YouTube asking people, "What is this?" Because it terrified him. And this is a guy with a lot of experience, and you know, you don't know how you're going to react until it happens. And honestly, it's not going to be the same every time. You know, this time he might snort and it's tough and then go away and just be kind of agitated. Next time he might come up and stomp on your tin. You know? Because they can be unpredictable depending on what's going on and their own experiences and stuff. Like, you can't predict exactly what an animal's going to do every time. The most terrifying animal I came across was a gray jay because it attacked three times in a row. I camp next to moose. They've never given me a problem, but you never know which animal it is that's going to give you that problem.
You know, I camped and canoed in northern New Brunswick growing up, and I can tell you I've had moose go through our camp on more than one occasion, and in the middle of the night, they don't care how many people are there, because one instance there was 15 of us on that campsite, you know, with lots of equipment. There would have been lots of scent for that moose, but he was not happy we were there, and he made sure we knew it. Luckily, he didn't go over anybody's tents or anything, but he blew through our campsite and then went over the hill and into the lake, but he made sure that we knew he was there because, again, he wasn't happy that, you know, everybody was there.
I mean, I think they're all creatures of habit. Like, animals generally are. And if that's his route to the water, then that's his route to the water. And you're now in its way.
Yeah.
And to that animal, that's a thing of safety. When they have to change their route, that puts them in a situation where they're uncomfortable.
No, and you know what? I don't want your viewers to kind of get scared off by animals, because, again, going back, the animals and creatures in the woods are my least worry. I don't worry about any of that kind of thing when I'm in the woods. I more worry about myself making a stupid decision that, you know, affects my health while I'm in the backcountry, or somebody else's, and that's, or other people. And even, be quite honest, backcountry camping, I don't really worry much about other people either. I more worry about making a stupid decision while I'm out there.
I think the big thing there, though, is most trails are pretty clear. You can tell if an area has been beaten down and something regularly goes through there. And that's what we really started off here saying, is don't set up right on the trail. Set up in an area that allows things that are traveling the trail to move through. Because if you're not in the way, you may just wake up to a great sight, a beautiful animal walking by. But if you're blocking it, that's where I think you may get the huffs and the puffs and stuff. And I have, you know, we've seen some beautiful animals near our sites and stuff before, and it's been a great experience. Sorry, I lost track of my thought.
All right, just kind of moving along then. What I'm hearing from most of our stories here is, if you're taking somebody new, make sure you've scouted the area. Don't try and go to a new spot. Not saying that you can't. It's just probably not the best idea to go to a spot you have very little experience with, because there might be, you know, you might set up next to a trail. You might get the deer, you know, huffing in the tent if you're next to the trail. Like, you should have an idea of what that area has to offer you for your trip out, what some of the wildlife could be in there. Because I remember once I went hammock camping just off the, you know, ATV trail. I went far enough in the woods and I knew everything that was going to go around. And I mean, I stumbled into what I guess was like prime porcupine habitat, and those suckers were crawling around everywhere during the night. And it's all these things that can be unnerving to people. Like, you were saying about the stag growling. I can remember another story. I took somebody out. They said they were fairly knowledgeable. I had no reason to not believe them, and it was just kind of off in the distance, but they heard this low growl, and I mean, we're not talking young kids or anything like that either. We were in our 20s, and in the middle of the night, they're like on the tent, hey, do you hear that? And I'm out like a light, and I'm kind of like half coming to. They're like, what is that sound? And I stopped, and I listened for a minute, and they're like, there's something growling in the woods, man. Like, what do we do? And I listen. And it's a dirt bike off in the distance. Like, you know what I mean? But that's the things you got to realize. Like, this stuff can happen. You know what I mean? And it had this fella petrified. Like, literally, he was at least as white as that candle, if not whiter. Like, he was just absolutely terrified. And it was nothing more than, like, one of those two-stroke 450s or something off in the distance just grumbling along. He was convinced it was something growling in the woods, like there was a bear or something. So it's all these things you gotta be aware of. So if you know the area, like I went with him, which was the funny part. And I'm like, that's just a bike, man. Like, don't worry about it. But so I didn't know the area. But if I had a thought about it, and, you know, that's a mistake I wouldn't want to make, taking somebody in the woods now that has very little experience in there, even around lakes and stuff, muskrats and beavers and stuff like that entering the water at night. Sounds like somebody threw a rock in the water or a dead body. Like, you know what I mean? And just birds skimming the water makes weird noises. Like, these are all things we take for granted because we've been out there. We hear them generally in the day because we're in the woods so much. And these people, they just don't pick up on these sounds quite as... They don't have the experience to back it up is what I'm looking for.
If you've ever heard an owl pick off an animal in the middle of the night, that's a pretty freaky noise too. But... I think this is why it's really good for newbies to try to get out with experienced people, because then they get to see your reaction, and they kind of, that's going to give them that confidence. Because when you sit there and say, well, wasn't that cool? Like, that was an owl taking an animal out, or that was just a turtle falling into the lake. Cause I get that at my cabin all the time. And it does sound like someone dropped a boulder into the water. Like, it's a
well, to be fair, you got snapping turtles that are the size of boulders, man.
Yeah, but they are, right? And they hit the water hard, and you're sitting there thinking, like, what was that? Like, but, you know, you also hear the peepers going, and you hear the toads going, and all these other animals going, and you get a lot of noises at night. And yeah, you're right, some of them can be a little unnerving, but most of them are just normal everyday noises. And just having that somebody with a bit of confidence, a bit of knowledge with you, that's going to give them a lot of confidence. I highly encourage new people to go out with somebody who does have some experience, some knowledge, because it'll give you that little bit of security, I think. And once you've done it a few times, then you're going to be a lot more confident yourself to go out and do trips.
Realistically, not everybody does have that one friend that, you know, has a lot of knowledge or even a little bit of knowledge in the backcountry or camping or what have you. You know, not to knock the internet or anything, because the internet's a great thing for information. But join a hiking group, or join a couple of different groups on Facebook where you can connect with people outside of the internet and get to know a few people. Because that's probably your best outlet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And there are a lot. Like, here in Nova Scotia, I've joined a few groups. I haven't gotten out with them enough times, really. But areas that I frequently travel, there are oftentimes hiking groups there that they plan regular hikes with a large number of people. So you can really get to see different trails, different areas. And you can go out with people of various levels of experience, and it's a great chance to meet people.
It's a perfect way to network, and it's a perfect way to kind of gauge, you know, what you like and dislike, and, you know, the kind of people you're going to connect with that are in this genre, I guess you would say, for this kind of activity. You know, there's all kinds of people out there, and you're not going to get along with everybody. So the best thing for you to do is, you know, join those groups and get to know the people that are, you know, in your area and have that same kind of interest.
Yeah. And I definitely have done that. And I'm sure, Robert, you did too, because that's kind of how we originally met, was the Nova Scotia Bushcraft
The first annual Nova Scotia Bushcraft Gathering.
Yeah, but prior to that, they had other smaller gatherings, and some of them were very impromptu, and there was four or five members that tried different things, and I've met quite a few people through those. Some of those were great experiences. Some of those were kind of weird. It's just everyone had their own spin. And there was a bunch that I met that were very interested in doing stuff in the woods, as long as they could get there using a bus.
Yeah. And right? That's knowing your audience. You know what I mean?
I've seen that recently.
Yeah. There was a guy on that Facebook group, and he organized quite a thing. I think he actually eventually got kicked off for some reason. I never did understand that part, but he organized four or five things. Like, he was really big on organizing it, but he didn't own a vehicle of his own. Mm. So everything he did had to be on a bus stop or within like a short walk from a bus stop. And I'm sure that looked kind of interesting to see somebody get on to a bus with like a full pack back. Well, let's just forget
it. I know exactly who you're talking about. And it was interesting to see him come in to, into that gathering and leave that gathering. Now we kind of mentioned like know your audience. The other thing is, make sure, and I'm trying to loop back to a last thought here because I know we're running up on time. Make sure you have activities that are planned appropriately for who you're taking in the woods. Because what we like to do might not necessarily be what they like to do. So that you're back to the communication, like Chris talked about with his wife there, and they're talking about how they want to handle this. Same thing if you're taking anybody into the woods. Find out what they want to do, what they're expecting, what their expectations are, and how you can kind of cater to that, enrich that, and then empower them. Because what I find makes people come back to the woods and enjoy it a lot is giving them confidence and skills that they can repeat. So if you're doing activities they want to learn about, like I brought somebody in the woods once, and all they wanted to know was plant identification. And I mean, I suck at the majority of plant identification, but I found somebody that was good at it. And I was like, oh yeah, they're going to meet us in the woods and we're going to do a little, you know, walkabout and they're going to do some plant identification. It was great. They thoroughly enjoyed it. Now they're pretty heavy into, they kind of went the survival route, but I mean, all the same thing. They're still out in the woods doing their thing and enjoying it. But it all started with plant identification. Now I have somebody else, they don't care what a plant is because they're going to take food. You know what I mean? They're more interested in, I don't know, shelter setups or fire or just scenery. Because that's a big thing, too. Some people just want to get out.
Chris, plant identification is fun. If you're taking anybody into the woods that's new, feed them well. Everybody likes to eat. You want them to enjoy themselves? I just know this from experience from taking my son. And he would tell me the best thing about going out to the woods is the food. And it's, if you're going to enjoy yourself, you know, eat well. And I think Ben said this in previous episodes of yours. And I know from camping with him, when Ben goes to camp, he doesn't take, you know, dehydrated food. He eats well. Mm. And if you're going to take somebody with you, feed them well. Yeah. Feed them what they like. They'll have a more enjoyable experience.
Oh, there's nothing I think you can do to better improve a good trip in having good food, because if somebody's eating well, they're having a good time. I don't care. Like, you cannot have a bad time and eating well. Like, it just doesn't happen.
No.
Well, this is it.
Right. And the other thing,
like, keep them dry.
Yeah, keep them dry.
Keep them dry, yeah.
And continuing on to that, remember the stupid little necessities that everybody forgets. Remember toilet paper. Remember a little bit of soap. Remember toothpaste. Like, these things that, you know, we may go out of our way to make dabs of toothpaste you can put in your mouth and all this stuff. Just get a little travel thing of toothpaste, jam it in the bag, and if they forgot theirs, because you'll know. You'll know if they forgot theirs come the next morning. It's nice just to be like, here you go. You know, next time you'll remember it. I guarantee you the second time they'll remember it, if there's a second time. All you're trying to do is ensure they have a second time. So all the stupid little stuff that we joke about and we make fun of each other about when we forget it, because it's a nuisance. Let's face it. You forget the toilet paper, it's a nuisance. Can you go out there and do your thing? Yes, you can. But I mean, it's a nuisance. If you forget your hand soap or like the soap flakes, can you go out and have fun? Yeah, you can, but it's a nuisance. Toothpaste, it's a nuisance. Bug spray. A lot of people, they'll pack this great big bag, forget bug spray, suntan lotion. You know, these niceties or creature comforts always seem to be the last thing that go in the bag because everybody's trying to remember the quote-unquote important things. I got my sleeping bag, I got my pillow, I got, you know, a bottle, I got my tent. All good and dandy, all things you need. But it's the creature comforts that really make it enjoyable. It goes right hand in hand with food with me, you know what I mean? Food to me is a creature comfort. You can go out there and eat like crap. Because when Ben and I first went out, that's what I did. I went out, I ate oatmeal and white rice. That was me. I packed lots of it. I wasn't going to starve. It tasted terrible. But it was, that's how I always did it. And about halfway through my bland oatmeal with a handful of unsalted, unroasted nuts, I look over, and I tell this story a lot. I look over at Ben, who's eating like bacon and eggs and I think a pepperette. I'm just like, I've been doing this wrong for so long.
You know, Chris mentioned it, but I think everyone who's ever camped with me has looked at me and like, I can't believe you're eating all that food. Like and it's true. Like when I camp, I take good food. I enjoy my food and I'm going to do it. And I'm going to take the extra time because it's worth it to me. So I've camped with some people that, you know, they just want something that's quick, simple and easy so they can get going. And that's great. You do you. But I'm going to get up in the morning and I'm cooking my bacon and eggs. I'm going to get up in the morning. I'm going to cook what I had planned because that makes the trip for me. So I'm going to be that guy. But here's a question, and this is a serious question. Do you feel you can over-prepare, especially for the first few trips? And by that, I mean, take that extra sleeping bag. Take that extra tarp. Take that extra little bit of food. Take the extra changes of clothes because when we get experienced at it, we kind of try to drop a lot of the stuff because we're trying to preserve some weight and stuff. But one of our trips, Robert, we darn near froze today.
Yeah, because we underprepared.
We underprepared. and we didn't really, because even if by the book, we had more than enough sleeping to sleep in those temperatures. It was just the humidity at the bottom of a waterfall was sucking the heat out of us way faster than we could replenish it. And it was extremely chilly. And that, for somebody who's new, I think could have really ended it. They would have been like, no, it's just a miserable time. I don't want to go through that twice. And we did two nights. This is because I remember the second night wasn't quite as bad. We had adjusted our gear, but
and that's the thing. We had enough know-how that once the first night was like, this sucked, we had the know-how to go, we got to reapproach this and figure out where we went wrong, and we had the stuff to rectify the situation.
So, like, I would kind of recommend for like, a first trip, do over-prepare a little bit. Do take that extra little bit of stuff, and it's a good reason not to do the big trip, not to plan that trip that's, like, a three-day trip or, you know, 100-mile trip on your first trip. Do a smaller trip so you can take that extra gear, and that extra gear weight bulk isn't going to be detrimental to the trip, because then you're going to get a feel for what that person likes and can handle. And then if they wake up in the morning and say, man, it was too hot, I couldn't sleep last night. Okay, great. Now I know you don't need a winter sleeping bag in the summer.
But there's people out there that do.
There are people who do.
I can tell you the last time I spent any time with Ben, I was with my wife, and we took a couple different sleeping bags. I took a summer-rated sleeping bag, I think was rated for 7, and then I also took a negative 20 bag, for a mummy bag for her, just in case she was cold. So the first night she decided that she was going to use the summer bag, and, of course, she complained that she was cold because it did get down to, you know, probably about 4 degrees, maybe even a little cooler than that, but way outside the limits of the bag. Mm-hmm. So the next night, she, sure enough, she took the, you know, the 20 minus 20 bag, and the next morning complained about being too hot. But I would much rather her complain about her being too warm than being too cool. Too cold. And that goes to, for, you know, anybody that's looking to prepare. I'm 100% a checklist kind of person. When I'm, before I'm leaving my house, I have a checklist. No matter if I'm going for, you know, a night, or if I'm going for 4 or 5 or even 9 nights, I'm running a checklist before I leave. And that's whether I take my, just myself, or somebody else with me. It's I don't like forgetting stuff, and I still forget it. But you know,
I was trying to say, Chris, you haven't camped with me yet. You haven't forgotten.
And that's one of my pet gripes, just on that topic, and I won't hark on it long, is overestimating sleeping bags. Everybody, and I'm not picking on your sleeping bag at all because it was too hot, but everybody goes, I had a minus 18 sleeping bag. Great. Don't expect you're going to go out minus 18 and sleep comfortably. Minus 18 means you will survive, but you're not going to like it. There is a comfort. There is a, what is it? There's comfort, something in the middle, and then extreme. And they all, every sleeping bag manufacturer is in the extreme end because they want you to know the absolute worst condition. You could take this out and technically survive.
Jump in the phone
bank. So, and that's where I was. I mean, I made that, that the night that Ben's talking about, I was guilty of that. I took my summer bag. I looked at the temperatures. It said it wasn't supposed to drop below 5. So I took my, I guess my spring sleeping bag. I call it my summer sleeping bag, but it's good to about, you know, 3 degrees, something like that. It's still above 0. And I had my wool blanket. I'm like, ah, it should be great. Didn't take into account any kind of wind chill, which we had. Didn't take into account any kind of moisture from the waterfall. And I mean, it probably dropped down to 0 or less in the middle of the night. But, and yeah, Scott. Yeah. Scott. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
You know, it's... If you're gonna, if you're a first time camper, or you're just getting into it, or you want to take somebody with you, don't worry about the weight. Worry about your comfort. Take that little bit of extra, you know, an extra blanket. Take that extra warm sleeping bag. It's a lot easier to be warmer and cool yourself off than be colder and try to get warm.
And that person can decide later on if they're willing to sacrifice the weight for a little bit of comfort. Give them as much comfort as you can going out.
Yeah, and that's it. And the same thing can be said about staying dry. Take that little bit of extra to stay dry, because warm and dry, you're much more comfortable, and it's a lot easier to get cooler than it is to get warmer.
Yes, 100%. And I had to grab my sleeping bag that I had for that trip, and it was 20F. So basically, I think that's 0 Celsius. So it should have been okay, but the conditions were extreme. But I still like that trip, and I'd still love to do that trip again. So here's something, though. What about when people just don't have the gear, and you don't have a lot of extra gear? Like, we all have...
Too much gear?
Yeah. And we have addiction.
Let's not beat around the bush. We got too much gear.
This is kind of like our AA, but we're not planning on giving up on it.
So this is my first time on your guys' podcast, but I could easily get up from my chair and go over to a closet not far from where I'm sitting, open the door, and there's not much space in that walk-in closet where all my gear is contained.
I know Ben has us beat hands down. But likewise, I'm sitting in my chair and I'm looking at 3 separate sleeping bags hanging around my room here. So,
to my right, I have large Rubbermaid containers just full of sleeping bags. To my left, I have my winter sleeping bag. And then I have a row of closets. Like,
I know you have us beat hands down, Ben. You got the best camp cave ever. But
and I have, believe it or not, a couple of boats.
The odd one, yes.
A couple.
Anyway, back to your thought, Ben. We kind of cut you off. Sorry, buddy.
But what if you want to take somebody camping and you don't have enough gear to supply them? What are some options? Because you can't send someone to Walmart and say, like, go to Walmart and buy everything you need. Because, honestly, although you can buy okay stuff at Walmart, I'm not saying you can't, or Canadian Tire. If you need to fully equip someone for a good trip, that can run some pretty big numbers. I mean, there are some options out there, and you guys will back me up on a couple of these. You can go to places like Value Village and eBay,
Amazon,
Kijiji. Look around, like, you can get used and discount stuff from different sites and stuff, but that still takes time and money.
Right, and you know what? I'll tell you. I don't know how many, you know, depending on where you're from and in the area that you're in, but, you know, Outfitters are a good place to start. Mech, I think, used to rent out some of their gear, and I think they still may. I think that list is shorter than it used to be. So look at where can you rent gear, especially if you're a first-time camper. This hobby, I guess you would call it, is not a cheap hobby if you actually start to take it seriously. So if you're looking at, you know, bang for your buck and whether or not you want to get invested in doing this kind of thing, go and see if you can find somewhere where you can actually rent some of the gear that you're going to need before you make that initial investment, and then regret buying, you know, whatever it is you bought.
Yeah, and I think I know where Ben's kind of going with this lead-in, because, you know, we have our secret stuff there. But I did want to make one comment here, because Scott's been throwing a few messages out there, and I just don't want to make you feel like you're missing out there, Scott. I have seen your messages there. I was just trying to figure out where to put them in. So a couple things that Scott said was back when we were talking about noises in the woods, things like pine martens, they have an ungodly sound in the woods, and they sound like banshees when they're screaming. A bobcat, if you ever heard one of those scream in the woods, man, they are terrifyingly sounding. And then in our food and comfort things, he said beer helps. And, you know, if that's your thing, if you like the adult beverages and a few wobbly pops, Ben and I took a few out in our first camping trip, because we didn't take enough to, you know, get inebriated. We took a few drinks to have while we were sitting by the fire. And
you didn't see the bottom of my bag, buddy.
No, I didn't see the bottom of the bag. I think I took all of, what, four cans in? We each took some experimental cans in, and we went with that. Yeah. And now he's saying certain areas have outfitters that will rent gear, just as you were talking about there, Chris. And an option in the Adirondacks is the Algonquin? Oh, an option in the Adirondacks and the Algonquin. And then Scott M., which I know that name. I know who that is, and I can't think of it off the top of my head. But anyway, he buys loaner gear every chance he gets, so use yard sales and stuff like that. But yeah, those are all options where you can get stuff and borrowing things. As the other Scott is saying, these are all great options if they're available right then and there. But what happens if, like, your buddy's like, oh, or, you know, girlfriend, whatever the case may be, let's go camping, and you got, like, a short amount of time to try and get some of these supplies in? Like you were saying, Ben, you could go to Walmart and you could purchase all this stuff, but...
Yeah.
You know what? I can tell you, I've used Outfitter services in the past. And if you do your homework and you know where you're going, Outfitters are an awesome outlet to use. Like, they're educated. They know the areas that you're typically going to be in. Especially if you're using an Outfitter. They know, you know, they're familiar with the maps. They're familiar with the trails. They're familiar with the lakes that if you're canoeing. So they're, in my own opinion, if you're not wanting to make that initial investment, you know, up front, and just to see if you're interested in doing this kind of stuff, use an Outfitter, because they're gonna give you the most information, and typically it's pretty accurate.
And so that was kind of where I was going. That was the avenue I wanted to go. And we're gonna throw some word out to, there's a company, a group, they have a podcast, they've contacted us to potentially do something with, we haven't, but they were called Nova Camp, I believe it was.
Novacamp.ca is their website.
And they have camp packages, and they're an example. There are other ones. They have a series of gear that you can rent, and it comes with a backpack, sleeping system, a stove. You know, these are great options for people that want to get out and try something, but don't know what they need yet. Because the thing is, the options can be overwhelming. And even take it from people like the three of us, because I think all of you guys will back me up on this. Every day we find a new piece of gear we want. And, you know, we all have plenty of gear, and I'm sure our wives especially would tell you they don't need more gear, but we kind of, you know, when you find this stuff, there is stuff that you want to try, you want to do, and finding the right gear can be expensive if you have to buy every piece And if you have my problem and you just don't like selling any of it, you're stuck with it.
You know what? And the benefit to, you know, from my personal situation, if my wife doesn't want the gear that I've purchased for her, that's fine. I'll use it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, so that you're not, especially if you're somebody who's already in this kind of thing and you're just trying to get, you know, your spouse or your partner involved, the gear is going to get used.
Yeah. Hmm. But it is great, and we talked about, like, meeting up with groups that are into this thing, because oftentimes it'll give you the opportunity to try gear you wouldn't normally get the opportunity to try. Because a lot of this stuff, it's not like you can try it at the store, or that it's always available at the store. Some of the gear that you bought, Chris, I know isn't easily available in Canada.
No, that's right.
So the challenge there would be to even find somebody who can get it. So if you know some people who have bought some of this gear, it gives you the opportunity potentially to say, can I see it? Can you show me how it sets up? Can I sit in it? Can I lay in it? Can I try it? There's a lot of gear out there, and I don't think, you know, without pretty big deep pockets, you could get the chance to try every type of gear and every option without. And a lot of the gear I've gotten to try has been fortunate through friends and stuff that have said, I have this, why don't you give it a try? And it really gives me an idea of where I want to concentrate my next purchases and stuff too. And a newbie is doing all of this. Like, they don't know, you know, which stove do they want? What type of sleeping bag do they want? What type of sleep system? What type of...
No, I think that's over, you know, even for me nowadays, like, it's just exploded the amount of gear that you can find online or otherwise, just in the last few years as to what's available to what was available even 5 years ago. So for somebody getting into this new nowadays, I can just imagine how overwhelming it can be just trying to figure out exactly, you know, what you should or shouldn't buy. And reviews will get you half of the way, but you got to be careful. Even some of those gear reviews that are on some of these websites nowadays, you don't know how that's, you know, how those reviews are getting there.
They can be biased. So you know what I mean? But that's kind of going back to the point here. That's kind of where the benefit of companies like Nova Gear and Outfitters and stuff like that, the cost isn't that high. I was just looking on Nova Gear's website there as we were talking, and I mean, there's things as cheap as like $25 a night for a single person, which gets you basically everything you need to go in the woods. A basic sleep system, a backpack to carry it all in, and a basic cook system. Everything else you would have to add in, but I mean, if that's the stuff you're missing, for $25 a night, you get to see, and it's good stuff. It's not like your low-end stuff either, or at least that's the way it appears. And you can see, like, oh, would I like this sleeping bag before I throw, for instance, like $160 on my Teton one, or $190 on the Mammoth one, or, you know what I mean? That's a lot of money to drop down without ever putting a foot inside it. That's, yeah. And it's a great place to do stuff like that. So, like, that's just why we want to bring a little attention to Nova Gear there, not, you know, also because hopefully we'll do something with them in the future, but
no, and even, you know what, in Nova Scotia, for instance, if you're looking at Kedzmukuchik Park, the outfitter close to, you know, right in the park is Why Not Outfitters. And I pointed a friend to them last year because he wasn't, he had a canoe, he wanted to get down, it fell through and we weren't able to go, but, COVID and all, but anyhow, his canoe that he had at home, I looked at him and outright told him, I said, you do not want to carry that through the backcountry. That's too heavy.
Yeah.
But I said, you know, why not? You can get a canoe from Why Not Outfitters. You know, he didn't even have to take a paddle. And that was, I think it was $150 for 3 nights. You know, I know a lot of people may not be able to afford that, but $150 to go spend a whole weekend.
It's, you know, better buying $1,000 canoe and using it once.
Well,
right, and
just put it this way: like, not everyone owns a truck or a large vehicle. Not everyone has racks on their vehicle, and so the cost of putting, you know, $300 rack system on your vehicle so you can comfortable strap in a canoe to the roof, and then, you know, $1,000, and that's not a a great canoe necessarily at $1,000. Like, that's an okay canoe. It doesn't take long that you're out $2,000-$3,000. And the extra cost of driving it there. So if you can show up and somebody brings the canoe basically to the spot you need to be, and you can drop it back off and you don't have to transport it, that's got a value to it. There's a fair value to that. And you don't, you're also not really up for the risks, you know, like.
Well, that's it. Like, I don't know if you've ever guys have ever talked to Cody down there, but Cody knows his stuff. He knows that area. And I go right back to, you know, people that are new getting into this kind of thing. Utilize the people who are educated. They know the areas. They, you know, they know the trails. That's why they're in that business.
Yeah. Yes. And it's a great avenue for new people to actually take a guided trip with somebody who's experienced at taking you out. And that is an option. If you don't know anyone, that's what these guys do, especially the Wynette Outfitters. They do planned trips with people. They take them down and you know, it allows you to do a harder trip and know that you're going to have success because you have people there that are used to taking people who aren't experienced down these trips. Mm-hmm. And they also take people who are very experienced.
Callum, that's actually my dream job. You know, if I could retire today and guide, I can guarantee you that's probably what I'd be doing.
And nobody teased you about that today at all?
Not at all, no.
No one said, let's just do it.
One of us has to win the lottery, and that's what we'll do. We'll start a guiding business.
I'm all over it.
You win the lottery, we'll provide the guiding support. But any case, we are coming up on 1 hour and 6 minutes, so we suppose it's that time of the night when we should get to final thoughts. So let's start with you, Chris. Seeing this is your first time on the podcast, let's stick you on the spot. What's your final thoughts for tonight? Tonight's topic
goes right back to what we were just talking about. Utilize the people who are around you who are educated. You know, if you don't know anybody, get online, find, you know, start talking to people. Use the information that's out there before you know, start putting yourself in a situation where you're uncomfortable.
Ben?
I kind of want to agree with a little tiny caveat, because be careful what you read on the internet, because there are a ton of people out there who are going to tell you have to do this, you have to do that, and a lot of them honestly don't know what they're talking about. They have these preconceived notions that aren't necessarily true. So be careful who you listen to. Make sure the people you're listening to are people you can trust and agree and have your best interest in mind. Because some people do, I'm on these sites all the time. People say, oh, you have to have this tent, or you have to have this, or you have to have that. That's not necessarily true. But do listen to the people who really do know what they're talking about and have your best interest in, and use the good experienced people that are out there. Don't get too quick to be sucked into hype and like the advertisements, because there are people who would send you out there with all kinds of gadgets that really do nothing. Those are the ones that kind of scare me. The big things are, make sure you cover your main bases and set reasonable expectations for your first few trips. That would be my big advice right there.
So what I heard was, I can't believe everything on the internet?
No. But we all see it, right? Like, how often you go on the Nova Scotia Bushcraft page and there's people coming in, like, you have to have this pair of boots, or you have to have this axe. You know, how many people say you can't go camping without a Grand Forest Brooks?
Well, you know what? And you see that even on, you know, YouTube. It's all out there.
Yeah.
You know, it's mostly marketing related, to be truthful.
I was going
to
say, you see the marketing and brand loyalty coming through, which is fine. If you're brand loyal and you want to, you know, pitch for somebody, good on you. But that doesn't necessarily mean you absolutely need it, or that it's the best choice for you as an individual.
Well, I mean, two of the three people here prefer hammocks. One of the three prefers tents. None of us are wrong, right? But I've seen people say the only way to go is with a tent, or the only way to go is with a hammock. And neither of that's true. You really have to find what works for you. And so, some people are a little overconfident. And I mean, I really do. When I go, I will often encourage people to try hammocks. But I have gone with 2-3 people now who've tried hammocks and hated it, just not liked it. It's not for them. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You do need to take some time and really understand what you need and what you want. And that's why we always say practice a lot of the stuff before you leave. The campgrounds we talked about is a great in-between from that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that gives you a good, safe place to practice if you can't really at home. But it's a good idea, even if you do it in your living room. Set up a tent. If it's in your living room or your backyard.
I've been camping for years, and I'm still not above camping in my backyard.
Oh, no.
It doesn't bother me. I actually said to a friend as a joke today, you know, because we're all on lockdown here in Nova Scotia, I have no problem about pitching my tent or a hammock and lighting the fire pit in my backyard and camping. I love sleeping outside, and it doesn't matter if it's in my backyard or if it's in a lake, you know, 20 kilometers in the backcountry.
You'd be surprised what you'll learn in your backyard, which translates into the woods.
Oh, man.
Exactly.
It is the best place to test a lot of your gear. Because the last place you want to test your gear is 20 kilometers in the backwoods. The last place you want to find out that you really can't sleep in this tent, this cot, this hammock, this sleeping bag, you know, is 20 kilometers in the woods, because you're stuck then. You have to sleep in it, or you at least have to
make an attempt at it.
and take it from somebody who suffered through a night. It's not fun.
You don't want to get, how far was I? 25 kilometers in the middle of nowhere. Helicopter dropped in and find out that your sleeping bag is too small for you. It's a terrible time.
Right?
But, yeah. Anyway, so my final thoughts for the night is just that. Communication. If you're going to take somebody out, know what their expectations are, like Ben said. Know what they're going to be comfortable with, like what Chris said there. I guess you're in that direction. Everything's mirrored for me. Anyway, make sure you know what they're going to be comfortable with, gear-wise, outdoors-wise, all of that. And like Scott and a few others have been saying here, just make a good pre-plan. Have an idea of where you want to go. Make sure you know the area. It's not a mystery to both of you. Gauge the person's, I don't want to say woodsy skill, but gauge how comfortable they're going to be in the woods. And don't be afraid to ask questions to these people. Like Ben said, sometimes just asking, oh, hey, do you got gear? And you get, oh, yeah. There might be more to that question. So try not to leave too many open-ended questions, especially if you don't know a whole lot about this individual and their skill level. Capability is the word I'm looking for. Capability in the woods. Instead of being like, oh, do you have all the gear? And they go, uh-huh. Well, oh, okay. I hear it's going to be cold. Is your sleeping bag at least, you know, like -5? Or, I'm taking an axe. Are you going to bring a saw? Like, give them questions that'll steer them towards where they need to go. And, of course, have fun and be safe.
So, you mentioned that trip I took where my buddy wasn't prepared, I had a tent that was literally like 2.5 feet wide and 5.5 foot long. And my buddy looked at me that night after I set it up and he said, can I sleep in tent with you? And I had to look at my buddy.
But man, we're going to be cozy.
Because I'm not fitting in this tent, really. Like, I'm 6 foot plus. So I'm sleeping in the fetal position because that I needed to make room for the two of us in the tent. Or in the canoe. So, no, he couldn't sleep. Now, fortunately, there was like 5 or 6 of us, and some of them had much bigger tents. And there was a spot that he could go, and it was perfectly fine. But I felt so bad because I hadn't thought of that particular thing. I had assumed from his answers that he had it. So, yeah, it's always good if you can to meet before and sort mm-hmm. of go through all your gear.
Yep. gear checks.
It's not always possible, though. I think like all the trips I've done with either of you guys, other than like going online and doing the video thing, we haven't been able to really, because we're leaving from an hours away.
No, well, that's it, right? And that's, I think my last planned trip that actually ended up getting canceled was with Ben and a couple of other individuals. And I didn't share my checklist with Ben, but the other two that were planning to come ended up falling through, but they had never been on a longer canoe trip. And I sent them a checklist. I said, you know, this is what I suggest you take. And again, I swear by checklists. It gives you an opportunity to go through your gear, know what you have, know what you need, and go through it 2, 3, 4 times. Because I can tell you, my wife can contest, I drive her nuts. Before I go on a canoe trip, I am in my living room with my gear spread from one end of it to the next, looking at everything.
Last trip we did, I did the same thing, and I had like 5 bins because I got 3 kids, and we were all going, and we had all the gear laid out, and then we're like, everyone gets a sleeping bag, everyone gets this, everyone gets that, and everyone's bin got filled by the end of the night.
But I mean, that's not a bad way to do it. So the two Scots in the comments, they both came up with some good taglines here. And I just want to put them on our final outro here. So Scott 1589, if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail.
It's true.
Words of wisdom. I've heard similar before, but I like the way that's said. And Scott out and about, if your buddy doesn't have a tent, make them carry the beer.
Not a bad plan.
I can't argue with either of that. I think those are both two good final thoughts to end the night on. So, we're at 1 hour and 15 minutes. We pushed through like normal. Maybe talked a little bit too much. But I'd like to thank Chris for coming on tonight. Like I said, Ben kind of jammed him on the spot. And then I backed him up and we forced him kind of half-heartedly into our video chat. And he stayed on. He was a good sport about it. So thanks for coming on, Chris.
Awesome. Glad you showed up. Yeah, you stuck around.
Yeah. And we hope you come back on some other time. It's been fun.
You never know, right?
And
thanks, guys.
No worries, Chris. Thanks a lot. For me, everybody out there, like we said, get out, have fun, play safe, get dirty. Ben?
Same. Send some pictures. I'd love to see pictures of people getting out and doing things. And tell us about your first time taking somebody that's never been out before. I'd love to hear those stories.
I have one for you. If anybody's out there listening to our, you know, tens and tens of listeners out there, actually we're into the hundreds now, so we're actually not doing too bad. Send us your best or worst ill-prepared story that you can laugh about now. Like, we don't want anybody's feelings to get hurt, but we, you know, we tease each other good-heartedly a bit. Chris gets teased by Ben. I tease Ben. Ben teases both of us. I mean, you know how it goes. As long as it's good-hearted, send us your best/worst ill-prepared story. And I have a couple of them. And that might be a good topic for some night. Just, you know, we'll have a little light-hearted night, and we'll get some people on, and we'll do some stories of the times they went out and they were either they or somebody they were with was very ill-prepared. Because the worst one for me was, the very short version, his buddy showed up with a blanket. Not a sleeping bag, a blanket for a 3-night trip. But that's a whole other story, and we'll save it for that. So from all of us here at Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures, y'all have a good night.
Night.
Night.